Okay, let's go ahead and get this started and call this meeting to order. This is the City Council Study Meeting for the City of South Jordan. Today is Tuesday, March 5th, 2024. My name is Dawn Ramsey. I have the privilege of serving as mayor of the city with this outstanding City Council seated next to me. And Mrs. Ender is just right there. She'll be right over here in a second. Thank you to all of you for being here and to our administrative staff. To each of you, thank you for all you do. We welcome guests, our friends who are presenting today, and any members of the public who might be joining us. There's nobody here in person, but anyone who might watch this online, we welcome you. We're going to open the meeting this evening with an invocation by Councilmember Patrick Harris.
Our dear Heavenly Father, we're thankful that we have the opportunity to gather together at this City Council study meeting. We're thankful for the staff and all the effort that they've put into for this meeting, and please bless us that we'll be able to understand the needs of our residents. We're thankful for the survey that went out, and we're very appreciative that we're able to hear from our residents and help us be able to apply these things in our survey so we can better serve our residents. And we're thankful for all that we have, and we say this in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Thank you. Appreciate it. Okay. Anybody have anything you'd like to bring up for coordination? We're not having our regular council meeting today because we have caucus night across the state. Anybody have anything to bring up?
Just a question. I see we've made some good progress on potholes. Is that when's the hot mix coming in?
Where's Ray? Down there. Ray, do you know when they're going to start the plant to start doing hot mix? It's usually, what, March, April?
Yeah,
they
ran it for a couple of days.
It's usually when it's above 50. Yeah. Like it's going to stay getting
close.
Above 50
yeah.
degrees.
Yeah.
Because it's usually got to be 50 and rising before they can put the hot mix down and fire it up. Yeah. But as soon as we get it, we'll go right to work.
Good.
Fixing the holes.
I've noticed you guys there's been a lot that's been getting fixed, so appreciate it.
We've been spending a lot of our time this week dealing with tumbleweeds, and that's tied up
yeah.
our sanitation
thank
crews
you.
And our
so
streets
good.
Crews. Mm-hmm. And it's a real kudos to our public works team. They recognized that early Saturday, and they got all of the crews and equipment out there before I could even call Director Garrison and say, hey, go fix this. They were already out there and on it. They've been on it this week, and they'll continue to help the residents out.
So thank you, because I saw a news article today saying another city sounds like they're just barely starting to get out and help their residents.
Another city wasn't interested in helping their residents, is what I heard.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I had so many people calling me out on social media, and by the time I was like responding, there was already a post on South Jordan City saying, here we are. Oh, thank you.
Rachel and her team got right on it. Ray and his team were right on it.
Yeah, it made a big difference.
It's been appreciated. And it's been noticed.
And I hear we can sell them on eBay, too.
Yes. About $500 is one I found earlier.
How much a tumbleweed?
What?
How much a tumbleweed?
Yeah.
Did you get the text message?
They had to take a small break Saturday to stop and plow snow for a while, but then they got right back on the tumbleweeds.
What a weather.
Yeah. So good.
We have fielded calls from all around the nation. As well as a couple of foreign countries
Mm-mm.
interested in doing stories
yes.
on this.
So crazy.
It's aired in England on the BBC. It's aired in Australia. It's aired all around the country. NPR.
No way, that's hilarious.
This morning I was on Fox News Weather.
You were?
Yes.
Rachel's phone
this.
Has rang nonstop.
Because of the tumbleweeds.
Yes.
Oh my
yeah.
God.
Rachel's over tumbleweeds.
Nobody cares about housing or homelessness, but they want to know about the tumbleweeds.
But here's my take on it. It's such a unique thing, right?
It
the
is
funny. The pictures in the video are like, what? That is crazy. But it's also light enough. It didn't. It is nice to have a story that isn't about scandal. There wasn't
True.
A shooting. Nobody died. There's no
right.
natural
it's
disaster.
It's actually funny. You
it's
can
no,
smile.
We can make it light. There's no lasting damage. There's no impact
true.
To property values.
True.
And so people,
no
we did an interview
agenda.
This afternoon with the Associated Press. So, yesterday talked to
so
NBC
funny.
Nightly News. It was on the
no
Today
way.
Show. It's been on NPR. It's,
I had no idea.
It's crazy.
That's funny.
Yeah, it's, people are fascinated by this. But I think it's also kind of refreshing. Today's Super Tuesday. There's a lot of heavy and whatever, and this is a good story, right? So it's kind of buffering everything else.
It was great.
And it's
the
going
video.
And Rachel's been working
yeah.
like crazy. So
yeah, really well done.
Yeah.
Thank you,
Thank
Rachel.
You.
I've got another good one, Mayor.
Okay.
Could you put the picture up?
Yeah.
I sent it. I want to show you guys this picture. So this is the fellow in the ball cap and the lady next to him are
Jamie.
Neighbors of mine.
Yes.
You know them.
I do.
The Talbots, good people. They're on a humanitarian vacation. So there's a place over in West Jordan that I know of that does that kind of thing. I don't know if that's who they went with. But anyway, they're in the Dominican Republic. This fellow with the blonde hair on the left side is also from South Jordan. You can see the Bingham T-shirt there. The fellow in the middle is from the Dominican Republic. And if you take a close look at the T-shirt.
Oh, my heck.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah, they were just so delighted to find that. So Summerfest.
Did she send that to you or did she post it?
No.
That's so
cool. Kevin sent it to me text this afternoon.
That
so
is hilarious.
Summerfest is being advertised in the Dominican Republic.
South Jordan is going global in more ways than
so
one. That's really neat.
Yeah.
That's good. They are good people.
Yeah, they are.
Like
the best.
Yeah. How fun. Thanks for sharing that. That's cool. Any other coordination for anybody? Anything? We don't have time to do an entire postmortem of the legislative session this evening because we want to make sure we get done in time for everybody to get to their caucus meetings. So, but we will do that. We will do that, just not right now. Okay?
I would love it.
Since we're time constrained. But the bottom line is, I think, sum it up in one sentence, I think we did okay. I think things turned out okay for us, and we were appropriated some money, and we got more good news about money. I got a call from Ryan Lovett, called me Sunday night, and said that that Congress had just finally passed the fiscal budget. And there's a line item appropriation for South Jordan in there.
Something
like
that.
Water
awesome.
Tank, so.
2 week extension they did or whatever.
Yeah.
Got us in it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So our line item is in there and that's
a purchase.
Pain, we might as well get it back.
Yeah, that's right. So yes, since all of the residents in the city of South Jordan pay federal taxes, we feel like it would be nice to get some of those back and trying hard to make that happen. And so we had that was a really good moment. That was a good phone call. So
very
good.
Nice.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we are excited. We always appreciate this. We have Kyrene and Gibb here with us with Y2 Analytics. We're going to turn to Dom Tini and Kyrene, and we're going to get the results of our 2024 community survey. Come on up.
Where would you like me?
Right up here is great.
Front center.
Wherever
yeah.
you feel comfortable.
Hot seat. We're nice. You know that.
Yeah, I do.
We go way back. You're this
we're,
is not
yeah,
first rodeo.
We're all friends. Here.
Yes.
Yeah, Kyrene goes without interaction,
right? Well, let's just get right into the fun stuff then. We are excited to share the results of the survey this year. Quick look at survey methodology. We were in the field for just about 3 weeks in January from the 3rd to the 23rd. We extended our fielding period at the end there, hoping to get a few more respondents on the younger end of the resident adult age spectrum. So sent out some additional text messages. We ended up with a total of 1,423 residents responding to the survey. So in total, at least opening and starting the survey, and then 875 of them completed the whole survey. A lot of those initial starts were residents opening the text message or email, so we're glad that at least they're paying some attention to us, even if they're not interested in sharing their opinions with us. But that 875 respondents results in a margin of error of about 3.3 percentage points for all of the aggregated estimates in the survey. And then we have a look here at the geographic distribution of those responses. You can see we have pretty good spread throughout each of the city's council districts. So really pleased with that as well. So looking at our high-level key findings here, we continue to see really positive quality of life indicators, including an average score of 83 on that 0 to 100 quality of life rating scale. I don't want to say something definitive and end up being wrong when I look back at all the other data, but this is if not the highest, one of the highest ratings in Salt Lake County and along the Wasatch Front right now. So congratulations. Residents really appreciate all that has gone into contributing to that quality of life in the city. Residents also tend to say that the city is headed in the right direction, and all of the elected officials have a relatively high approval rating. So really positive indicators across the board there. Things that residents point to that they especially like about South Jordan, that they really appreciate, include the safety of the community. It's relative size to Salt Lake City, so not quite as big a city, but a lot of convenience and amenities. So all of the convenience and charm of a big city with some of that small town feel in the tightness of the communities here, and that family friendliness resonates with that as well. Residents are particularly pleased with the efforts that the city has put into creating and managing recreation and open spaces and planning fun city events. So shout out to South Jordan Summerfest and the advertisements in the DR. when we ask residents what concerns they have looking towards the future, growth continues to be at the top of the list there. When it comes to housing and traffic and how communities will be affected by continued growth and the influx of new housing and additional cars on the road. Those are really the things that residents are focused on now and looking toward the next 5 years. We asked residents a series of questions specifically about the communication they receive from the city, and we continue to see that there's a good portion of residents who are interested in hearing more from South Jordan. So residents in South Jordan seem to be particularly engaged with the city, really appreciating the communication that they receive and rating it as quite useful overall. But when it comes to the channels that residents might like to see leveraged a bit more emails, and residents tend to prefer getting city news via email, which indicates to me not that Rachel and her team need to kick out more emails, but that we need to direct more residents to the right channels to subscribe to those email notifications that are most relevant to them. And then we asked a series of questions specifically about the new urban center development. Two mixed responses. Residents are excited about the prospect of economic development and the impacts that that will have on the community. But they are concerned, again, thinking back to growth, they're concerned about how the development will impact traffic specifically and growth a bit more broadly in the city. So continuing to mitigate those growing pains as the development moves forward is going to be critical to maintaining residents' quality of life. So looking at some of our high-level scores here, overall, 63% of residents say the city is headed in the right direction. When we reapportion the percentages here to take out that 1 in 4 residents who don't know or are unsure, decline to express an opinion, we are looking at an 85-15 ratio there. So 85% of residents say the city is headed in the right direction, just 15% say it's headed in the wrong direction. That I can confidently say is the highest score along the Wasatch Front among all of our municipal clients right now. So really a lot to be proud of here.
Thank you.
And you can see that this is consistent with what we've had over time, but what we've seen recently in a lot of neighboring cities and cities up and down the Wasatch Front is that those scores are starting to dip a little bit, or that residents are becoming a little bit less certain about the direction that their cities are headed. So to see South Jordan sort of maintain consistency with that high level of resident assurance that the city is headed in the right direction is a really positive indicator.
This is the best report we've ever had so far. So, you know, you just feel good about it. It's been good.
Yay, team.
Yeah.
Are we going to get the slides?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll email that after the meeting. Thank you so much.
When we look at residents' quality of life ratings over time, we're at an average of 83 on that 0 to 100 scale. You can see the scores are fairly consistent across council districts, all of them falling within the margin of error of one another. But if we really want to make comparisons, which I know you tend to,
Jason wants to.
Well, yeah, let's go over those in detail.
District 5 has the highest rating on average this year, with District 1 residents expressing the lowest average rating. But again, these are statistically tied, so you are all doing a fantastic job.
I'm fine.
When we ask residents how they feel about the job that the mayor and city council are doing, we have 10% who strongly approve and a total of 57% who approve of how you are handling your jobs and responsibilities. Again, that majority may not seem particularly glowing, but when you look at Congress, for example, 57 is a far cry from their approval rating, so congratulations. And we have about a third of residents, 35% in total, who disapprove of the way the elected officials are performing their jobs. Our highest approval rating for elected officials comes from residents in District 5.
Can you repeat that again?
And the lowest, or the area where residents are expressing the highest level of disapproval, is in District 4. Again, margin of error being larger here when we look at that council district level. Our strong approval ratings are tied across the board, and we have a couple statistically significant differences, but really just between the lowest and the highest end there. So the difference between the ratings in districts 4 and 5 are the only ones you see here that are statistically significant.
That's really fascinating and doesn't actually make much sense.
It doesn't make much sense. That's what I was thinking.
I'm wondering if it's because they're new residents to the city, like there's thousands of new people out there.
Well, you're
who really don't know.
Entirely
haven't
possible.
Been in the city for more than a year or two.
Yeah. Most, a lot of your district.
Most of my district is brand new in the city.
Yeah, sure. Fascinating.
Well, happy to continue to monitor that.
Now, is this with the new council district?
Yes. Okay,
good. I think that has, I can't put my finger on it, but I think that has something to do with it, too.
Just that they've just been in the city for less than a year, maybe two.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't make any sense, except that they just don't know. They're new.
When we ask residents how they feel the city today compares to South Jordan 5 years ago, we have about a third of residents saying that things are about the same. Again, thinking about that high quality of life score and the share of residents who feel the city is headed in the right direction, that about the same score, I think, should be viewed very positively. And when we take out those folks who don't know, haven't been here long enough to make that comparison, we have 41% of residents who say that things have gotten some degree better, and just 18% of residents who say that things have gotten some degree worse over the last 5 years. So despite the concerns about growth and growing pains, residents continue to feel that things are going well, and a large share of residents feel things have gotten better over time. And when we look at the comparison here, looking at this data point over time, you can see that 18% of residents who say that things have gotten worse compared to 5 years ago is tied with the lowest proportion of residents we've ever had indicate that the city is getting worse. So fewer residents, or as few residents as we've seen, expressing negative attitudes here. A lot of positive ratings. 41% of residents saying things have gotten better, and another 41% saying things have stayed the same, which again, really positive in this slide. The things that residents point to that they like most about living in South Jordan really focus on the amenities that the city has to offer and the safety and the strong sense of community here. So a lot of convenience, a lot of focus on the shopping and dining and access to those amenities. But low crime, it's a good place to raise a family. It's safe, it's clean with high standards. Residents are really satisfied with where they live. And overall, just over two-thirds of residents, about 3 out of 4 residents feel that they're receiving an excellent or good value for their tax dollar. Again, District 4, a little bit more disgruntled than the rest of the city, but overall, again, really positive ratings, high levels of satisfaction with the service that they're receiving for what they are contributing to the city in taxes. We did include this year, which we haven't in the past, but we included an approximate amount or a share of residents' property taxes that go to the city specifically. And part of me wonders if perhaps residents in District 4 were a little bit more surprised by that than some others, so that might point to...
I'm curious how the wording on the questions are. I wonder if anybody in District 4 is confused between HOA and city services.
I think there's a lot of merit to that question.
Because I think that we're in charge of things that we don't necessarily run.
Because your entire district is part of the
Daybreak.
HOA versus mine goes outside of the Daybreak HOA.
Right. And they pay more than everybody in the city for whatever it is
right.
that their services are.
For one
right.
or two HOAs. So I wonder if they aren't, if there's not clarity. So I'd say watch that with our wording, maybe
we
can clarify.
We asked the question, said a home in South Jordan valued at this pays this much in city taxes. Because
mm-hmm.
we were concerned too that they were putting the school district in the county and everybody
mm-hmm.
else in there.
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to be specific that it was the services that the city's providing.
Okay.
But,
except your district is where all of the most new growth is happening.
100%
so you
is.
Have the shortest amount of time lived in the city. Perhaps there's
less experience with city services and seeing that number on the screen.
Actually, this is the best thing ever because they kind of lived here long enough to know.
Yeah, I think
they're new to everything. So
yeah.
That's what I think it is.
There's a lot to be said for that, but happy to keep an eye on that going forward.
Yeah.
I don't think this
just,
is
just keep in mind the whole District 4 is all Daybreak.
Maybe we can
mm-hmm.
do a cross tab on the amount of time in city.
Sure.
That would
yeah.
be interesting.
Happy to.
If we're finding the poor
yeah,
scores by the people that have lived here less than 2 years.
Sure. Yep. Happy to take a look at that.
Because the thing that I really like is that the scores from all of the areas that have been here the longest are higher than that. Yeah, they're going
mm-hmm.
up. So.
We also have a strong majority of residents who are likely to recommend South Jordan to others as a good place to live. Again, this is a question where in some of the areas that are experiencing the most explosive growth, where residents are really feeling the growing pains the most, that recommendation score has dipped over time. That is not the case in South Jordan. 93% of residents would still tell their friends and family that South Jordan is a great place to live. So there's less of the lock the gates behind me mentality.
Despite the concerns about growth, which
yes.
exist. We all have those same concerns.
Sure.
We're
yeah,
all,
right.
We are mindful of that. We all join them. So it's fascinating to me that it's not a lock the gates behind me. I'm not recommending this because I don't want anyone else to move
mm-hmm.
here, right? And
mm-hmm.
so that's really
yeah.
fascinating.
I think that really speaks to the quality of life that has been maintained despite this period of growth that the city has been working through. Pretty consistent across council districts here as well. The residents in District 3 are slightly more likely to say that they are very likely to recommend South Jordan as a good place to live. When we look at the city initiatives or the strategic initiatives of the city and residents' evaluations of those things, overall, residents are most satisfied with the city's performance in regards to creating accessible parks, trails, recreation, and open spaces, providing a safe community, and providing opportunities to participate in city events and programs. So that level of engagement and recreation and feeling safe participating in those types of activities are really the defining features here that residents are most satisfied with overall. Nearly 90% of residents say that they feel the city is doing an excellent or good job in each of those areas. When we look at the areas sort of in the middle here, again, majority of residents are satisfied with the city's performance across all of these measures, but creating some sort of stratification, communicating effectively with residents, developing and maintaining reliable utility systems, transportation networks, and facilities, establishing laws that maintain an orderly community without being overly burdensome, and promoting commercial and residential growth to improve the city's economy are sort of that mid-tier where there's a little bit more inclination for residents to say that the city is maybe doing a fair job. These are also some of the areas where we're getting a little bit more technical, looking at parks and recreation opportunities, safety, city events. Those are pretty easy to digest things. Some of these are a little bit wonkier, so I'm not surprised to see, again, those fair scores ticking up a bit. We're not seeing a strong increase in poor ratings anywhere here. Then the areas at the bottom of the chart here, implementing government policies to efficiently use city resources. Still 2/3 of residents feel that the city is doing an excellent or good job in that regard, but definitely less glowing ratings than when we look at parks and recreation. And then planning for the long-term needs of a growing community is the area where residents are the most likely to say that the city is doing a fair or poor job. So about 1/3 of residents on that end of the scale for that planning measure, which again, I don't think is reflective of a lack of planning by the city. I think it's reflective of residents not being as aware of that plan or recognizing what the next steps are. I think that's something that perhaps the city can do to toot its own horn a little bit more, is that there is a plan, and that all of these growing pains that residents are worried about are being mitigated, and you know how the city intends to do that going forward, I think is the best way to assuage some of those concerns. But again, those concerns come from about 1/3 of residents, so this could look a lot worse.
Yeah, no, I agree with you though. I think it's, we know that all of those plans are in place. That's what we do every week, right? Is we're planning, envisioning this to make sure that we can maintain that, so it does come down to our messaging. We just have to tell our story more, better, something.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And did you make a note that next year we're going to ask, how long have you been in the city?
I think we have asked how long you've been a resident. That's one of our demographic questions. Yeah.
Questions in the survey.
Okay.
But we could go back and do some.
We'll look at a breakdown for some of these things.
If it's
by
something we've got to work on, like
residents.
When they initially come in, they're not fans, and then they become fans, or
sure.
If there's something happening on the west side that everybody's, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'd like to know.
Yep, happy to take a look at that.
You may also want to look at their age.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Good point.
We are youngers.
I mean, it may be an age factor.
Yeah.
It might be. That's a good point.
Looking at residents' attitudes toward these city initiatives over time, you can see the scores for accessible recreational amenities have gone up this year relative to last year. So really, it seems like last year was the anomaly overall. We're sort of returning to normal for most of these ratings. You can see there was a bit of a dip in scores last year. For our 2024 ratings, residents are overall most satisfied with the city's performance in regards to recreation, city events, and then we have safety there that has also, or communicating effectively, excuse me. I think those colors might, or maybe we're missing a line. Oh, I'm just losing it in, it's the same as the participating in city events. My apologies.
Yeah, that's me. I'm like, why did the two blocks
merge? I lost it. It's a little easier to differentiate the colors on a smaller screen, so I apologize about that too. Participating in city events or in opportunities to participate in city events, accessible recreational amenities, and just providing a safe community are the areas where we score the highest this year and consistently in years past. When we ask residents what the most important issues facing the city are today and looking toward the next 3 to 5 years, today there's a large focus on traffic and housing, crowding, all of the things that feel very immediate. When we look toward the future, still a lot of focus on growth and traffic, but maybe a little bit more emphasis on housing and infrastructure. When residents are thinking about the issues facing the city with that forward-facing lens, it really does come down to, is there enough affordable housing for the population growth that we're seeing, and do we have the infrastructure to handle that influx of population?
Although there's complete contradiction, right, in these.
Oh, absolutely.
Well. People are concerned about affordable housing and growth, and then people are concerned about
density.
And they don't, mm-hmm. they're opposed to it, right? And mm-hmm. so there's one for one pretty much with each one of them.
Yeah.
Know?
And that is one
which
of
which isn't actually a surprise. It's not a surprise because people live in different types of neighborhoods. We have different demographics. We have different ages. So that's not really a surprise.
And I think the one of the most difficult things about the housing gap issue is that residents don't necessarily see density as the market solution that best serves their interests. So they want affordable housing, they want close by housing, but they still want it to look the way that affordable housing looked 20, 30, 40 years ago. They don't want their children or grandchildren moving into crowded townhomes or apartments. They want them to have that sort of idyllic white picket fence and a cute little yard. And we just don't really have the land to provide that at the scale we need to for the population growth anymore. So it's not inconsistent in the public's mind, but it is in terms of the policy, yes, of the policy decisions and land use decisions that have to be made.
Yeah. When we asked residents which of the following issues or aspects of life in the city that they feel is the most important for the city to address or pay attention to, and which is the least important on their list of priorities, the number one most frequently selected...
Number one is traffic, number zero.
Yep. Traffic at the top of the list.
An incongruence.
Yep. Transit is not residents' preferred solution to the traffic flow problems,
the traffic
as it turns out.
Do it through everybody else on the
road. Yes.
Yeah. Bigger roads.
Yes, bigger roads.
Quality of life is another area where a large share of residents are interested in seeing the city continue to focus or pay attention. Public transit, housing options, and economic development have the largest share of residents saying that those are lower priorities relative to these other areas. So, fascinating.
It's because they already have houses.
There is that.
But if you ask them about taxes, they would like lower taxes. So.
Oh, of course.
So economic development should really be a little higher.
That doesn't make a lot of sense.
After cake and eat it too.
Yes.
As long as you're in that way for us all.
Looking at our city service ratings this year, you can see fire and emergency medical services has the highest score at an 87 on that 0 to 100 scale. Garbage collection is right behind them at an 86. And then we have another three city services in the 80s.
Garbage
and then a
collection is
86. Share.
Remember when recycling was like 19?
Oh. Yeah. recycling has rebounded pretty significantly back to 70 on that 0 to 100 scale. So the city has only four city services that receive scores lower than a 70 on average. Those are surface maintenance on city streets, water conservation efforts, city code enforcement, and then planning, zoning, and building services.
Interesting.
The caveat that I
always gets picked on.
Yeah, the caveat that I have to
no,
have
no respect for Stephen's
like,
group.
You know
what?
You can just write
Stephen
Chase.
It's because this Stephen's group.
Stephen's name is listed in the verbatim response.
Yes.
Maybe like how they had to
in a positive manner.
And just get written up for being like the best streets maintenance in the state.
Usually it's snow plowing.
Yeah. I mean, shouldn't they just call us out on the news if there are street maintenance?
Yeah.
Remember, though, this was in the middle of pothole season when the survey was out.
This was January.
Because
last year was the middle
of
plowing snow and we got rated.
I think
really
they still remember last season when the road was blown up because of the wind.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Residents tend to have a relatively short-term memory unless it's something that inconvenienced them. So I'm not surprised to see surface maintenance relatively low on the hierarchy here. Water conservation efforts, I am surprised to see it relatively low here. That's one that I'm interested in delving a little bit further into.
We do and offer more than any other city in the entire county, along the Wasatch Front even.
And it's possible that some of that relative dissatisfaction, again, we're still looking at a passing grade here, but some of that relative dissatisfaction could come from residents who feel that the city does too much. So that's the difficult thing with water conservation. It's a bit of a dual-edged sword. So,
it could also be the national narrative. You know, they might not see everything that's going on, and they hear all of this other stuff that's on.
We've had public come into our meetings and say things that we know aren't exactly right. And so I think it's a lot of that.
I think you hit the nail on the head. I keep having that same thought. I'm like, you know, in a time when the national narrative is very few people even trust anything about government anywhere, These are great numbers because there are a lot of folks, which is why the age question is a good question, right? But who don't feel like there's anything about any government that they can trust. And so I'm glad that we have a lot of our residents who do engage enough to feel good about where they live. Yeah.
Yeah. And I will say, in Stephen's defense, I think that
don't know.
What we see consistently is that saying planning and building and zoning in any combination tends to elicit some negative responses from residents in this high growth environment. So I think you're the scapegoat. I'm sorry, Stephen. looking at the highest ranked services over time, pretty consistent set here overall. A slight dip in evaluations of street lighting compared to last year, but that rating was also a little bit higher than average last year, so I actually see this as more of a return to normalcy. But fire and EMS really just taking the lead at the top of the charts here, followed again very closely by garbage collection.
I
so
those guys hung the Christmas lights.
Lots of satisfaction there.
Where was she?
She's not here.
Looking at the lowest ranked services over time, you can see that massive dip in the recycling score in 2020.
We remember those years.
We do remember
that. Yeah. It'd be hard to forget. But we have nearly recovered at this point. So recycling is back up on par with the other city service ratings there. City code enforcement is down slightly from last year. And planning, zoning, and building services, again, down slightly from last year. The only consistent decline, though, would be that city code enforcement score. So that is something I think to keep an eye on as we're thinking about residents' attitudes toward public safety and sort of the look and feel of their neighborhoods and how that affects their quality of life.
That actually doesn't surprise me.
What is city code enforcement in their mind? What are they thinking? Do we know?
We don't have a specific definition.
If you're above 50%, you're doing okay.
Yeah. In the service data here, but when we look at the open-ended responses, residents' issues around code enforcement tend to focus on something they don't like about what their neighbor is doing in their yard or driveway.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a lot of aesthetic concerns.
Yeah.
Weeds, extra cars and parking. Houses,
I'd like to see deteriorating. I'm interested how this breaks down per district. Again, mine is all HOA. I wonder if they're lumping some kind of...
I hear District 5 looks good on.
You're just good at everything, Jason. I'm just curious because sometimes people... Sometimes they get confused of where's the HOA and where's the city. And I wonder...
We actually see a lot of that on the social media.
Right.
A lot of that.
And I think city code is an area where that line is especially blurred in residents' minds.
We don't
so have to take
HOA
a look at that
stuff.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right. But do I get called out on social media about it?
Yeah.
I totally
sure, of course.
Tamara, what are you doing about this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, happy to take a look at that. That's a great point.
Not that I want another bad score, but
we'll take a look.
But I think it's an extra unique factor that has to at least be acknowledged in this data because we do have the largest master plan community with its own unique features. Jason, I'm trying to be politically correct. Yeah. No, but do you know what I mean? It is
no,
real.
Absolutely.
It is real. And there is a significant blur between the lines of what is city and what isn't city.
That's right. This is just another quick look at those city service ratings grouped by department rather than individual services. You can see our fire and emergency medical sort of stands alone at the top there, but public works sort of running the gamut, average ratings overall at about mid-70s there, high 70s average ratings for recreation, and then public safety or police services, we're looking at a high 70 average rating as well. And looking at those average ratings over time, pretty consistent overall, with the exception of our engineering department. So we had a bump there in 2022, but sort of, again, back at normal levels this year.
Interesting.
looking specifically.
Oh, is that when the interchange opened?
Yeah, it is.
That's when the construction on Bangor finally finished, right?
Opens.
Yeah. I'm like, wait a minute, it doesn't take a genius to figure out now. People were so happy to have that.
So 98?
It's going to be a lot. Get it two more
years. We'll have another bump coming
we'll
up.
Another next year, this is going to tank because of 98 itself, but it'll go back.
That's good. Looking at those average service ratings over time within Public Works, again, a lot of consistency, but our blip in the matrix there for the recycling program. Being the main exception.
Is that because everybody was home and they noticed it?
Each had a policy
no,
change.
It was, yeah, it was a change. And it was dramatic.
It was a policy change that we reversed pretty
that
quick.
Yes.
That we reversed quickly, but not quick enough.
Not quick enough for it not to register here, at least. Yeah.
That's seismic skill.
Looking at the Recreation Department service ratings over time, again, a lot of consistency there with a little bit of fluctuation recently in evaluations of senior citizens programs. So a bit of a dip in 2022 there compared to prior ratings, but sort of back at normal levels with that one as well. And then Public Safety Police Department services, animal control service ratings down ever so slightly, police ratings up ever so slightly compared to last year, but overall well within the range of normal. And then the individual departments that don't have multiple services that we're evaluating in the survey, fire and emergency medical, putting a nice gap there between itself and other services.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yes, of course.
Did you say we had 1,800 plus people respond? Is that what I remember?
So 875 completed the survey. We had initial interest or interaction from about 1,500.
So if we go back on this linear graph, is that consistent? We have about 800 people each year?
Except for years where we refresh the panel, where we usually get... upwards of 1,300. Mm-hmm. Yes, most years were between 700 and 900 respondents. Okay. When we ask residents if they have any particular experiences or comments about interactions with city services they'd like to share with us, mostly we see things that residents are really satisfied with, things that are particularly positive in interactions that they've had with specific departments or services. And then there are some very specific complaints as well, as we might expect. So we have some frustration around getting a permit, seeing so many things against code in other folks' properties. So again, coming down to code enforcement and what our neighbors are doing with their houses or properties. Some concerns about the growth overall or some specific issues around secondary water. I'm not sure whether to see the Google Fiber being installed and city workers observing that work as positive or negative.
Well, that's negative.
A Big Brother's watching sort of comment maybe. Mm-hmm. But I did like this comment in the top left-hand side of the screen here. My husband called the city once about a bike lane that needed a repair, and we were impressed that it was addressed that very day. So the level of responsiveness is recognized by residents.
More husbands can be just like that.
Good comment. Looking specifically at residents' evaluations of city communication sources, overall we have about 40%, 39% of residents saying that they currently receive information or news about the city through email, another 30% specifically through city newsletters. We did not differentiate between a printed newsletter or an email newsletter, but those email notifications more broadly encompassing things outside that regular newsletter cadence. So in total, we're looking at about 2/3 of residents who say that they're turning to city-specific notifications on some regular cadence. Those also tend to be the preferred sources for those residents that are utilizing them. And there is a bit of an opportunity gap here still between the share of residents who currently utilize email notifications from the city and those who would prefer to receive emails from the city. So again, just directing those residents to those opt-in channels, I think, is going to be our most effective way to bridge that gap. We'll never get everyone to opt in. We won't ever have perfect parity on these scores, but this is really positive that we're seeing so many residents saying that, yeah, I'm able to receive most of the information that I want from the city through the channel that I prefer. We have a majority of residents who say that they're happy with the current level of communication they receive from the city, 54% in total. But we do have 40% of residents who would like to receive some degree more information or more engagement from the city. So, Rachel, just keep doing what you're doing is all I can say. Overall, residents feel that the communication they receive from the city is quite useful. 54% say it's extremely or very useful, and 94% total say it's at least somewhat useful to them. So really positive ratings there. We have 38% of residents this year who said that they contacted a city office over the past 12 months, pretty consistent with what we've seen over the last few years in that regard.
And it's fascinating because if you look from 2016 to 2024 at how much we've grown, mm-hmm. how many people we've grown by, that's having true. That number be so low considering the pot is grown so much, that's interesting.
That's a lot more clients.
We just had them all call Tamara.
Yes, bring it. Thanks, Patrick.
Also, she looking at residents' that. Attitudes about their contact resolution, so whether that call or contact that they made with city offices was resolved on their first contact or within one transfer, pretty consistent ratings across the board here, but 47% of residents say that they were able to have their issue, concern addressed within the first contact with the city office. So that's really positive. And most of the reasons that residents have for contacting the city in the past year fall under the public works or public safety categories. But when we look at the other responses that residents have, it's clear that first, some of the things that are likely to fall under some of these other department umbrellas aren't entirely intuitive to residents. So making sure that the city directories and those employees that they do have first contact with can help address their concerns and point them in the right direction is very important when we have, again, about one out of four residents not knowing how to categorize the issue they reached out to the city with. And then HOA questions coming up here, I think, does speak exactly to the conversation we were having earlier.
I don't know how that ever gets better. I think we just live with that.
I know it's many years away, but once the Daybreak community is more fully built out, I think you don't have as much new growth coming in.
Yeah, and then I'll have the whole annex area in my
true. We'll just transfer it. But I just feel like as the area becomes more stable, people will know
it's like
more.
The Hunger Games, I'll be in District 4.
It'll all change in 2032.
Thank you. There we go.
The population will all shift again.
Yeah, we'll realign it when I'm dying.
May the odds ever be in your favor.
I fought those gnats, remember? I fought them hard.
When we ask residents whether they agree or disagree that they were treated with courtesy and professionalism by the city when they reached out, 89% of residents agree. So again, really positive customer service interactions and perceptions from residents who have reached out within the past year.
That's great.
Looking at residents' attitudes about the urban center development specifically, we have about 3 out of 4 residents who are aware of the project, which I will say is one of the highest awareness ratings for a newly announced development project that I've seen.
Good.
So bravo to the communications and promotion and sort of generating some enthusiasm around the development. I think that goes a long way towards assuaging residents' concerns about the growth and the growing pains that could come along with that.
when we ask residents what they might be concerned about, if they have any particular concerns with the project, it really does hinge on traffic and infrastructure pressures. So how that traffic and congestion will impact the rest of the city, how the new developments will impact the overall population and demographics of the city, and then water use and conservation also being an issue of concern thinking about a new development area.
I'm kind of curious on that comment, Daybreak should be its own city. I'm kind of curious if we have, are more residents outside of Daybreak making that comment, or are residents, you know, inside Daybreak?
There's residents inside Daybreak.
Residents inside Daybreak that don't realize they live in South Florida.
Yeah. It's usually when they figure that out that they make that comment.
That
one definitely cuts both ways.
You see it every
day.
I've seen it all directions.
Looking at residents' attitudes about specific aspects of how the urban center might impact quality of life in South Jordan. Overall, residents believe that economic development that comes with the urban center will have a positive impact on their quality of life. 38% say that they believe it will have a very positive impact. So a lot of optimism there. 65% total say that public transit will be positively affected by the urban center development. And we have 59% of residents who say that overall quality of life in South Jordan will be positively impacted by the development.
That's good.
Infrastructure, we also have a majority of residents. 51% say that infrastructure will be positively affected. And then we get to some more divided opinions. So we have 39% of residents who feel that housing options in the city will be negatively affected by the urban center development. Again, thinking about some of the concerns that residents express about density and new housing developments that take that shape, that's not particularly surprising to me. But seeing that 31% of residents feel that it's a neutral impact also suggests that there is a sizable portion of residents who realize that this is the new normal, that South Jordan can't be ranches and acres on acres forever. So I think that sort of normal distribution that we see for that housing option impact in particular is heartening. I don't know if we would have seen as large a neutral response, say, 5 years ago. And then when we look at residents' attitudes about the environmental impact the urban center will have, we start to see negative concerns creeping up. Again, thinking about the water conservation and impacts that residents mentioned specifically in those open-ended responses, that's where I assume that concern or worry about a negative impact is coming from primarily. We have 50% of residents who feel that safety in South Jordan will be negatively affected by the urban center. So that is something that I think is a pretty pressing communications mandate or issue, that we need to get the message out that this is not something that's going to erode that safety and that sense of community that South Jordan enjoys.
Well, and I think probably tied in with that is the current perception of the current ballpark
100%.
Neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're
thinking,
you're bringing the ballpark
is.
Here, we're going to get the exact same problems.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah. And so again, I think it's largely a messaging issue here more than anything else. Bringing these amenities to South Jordan doesn't mean that South Jordan is going to become the ballpark neighborhood.
May I ask a question, Mary?
Yeah, go ahead.
Do we have a plan of sharing this data, Dustin, with our partners at Larry?
They asked for it today, so we'll be sharing them.
Okay.
Yeah,
because we should definitely tee them up that, like, here's some places where you can make the difference,
mm-hmm.
right? Because if we're just looking at this going, it's not going to affect the change that they can affect.
Yeah, it's typical that we share our annual survey with them. And in fact, Cameron asked for it today.
Good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Except Cameron. Cameron with the HOA.
Cameron with Larry Miller Jackson.
Yeah.
And he'll share it with.
It can be conflicting depending on what chat.
I was going to say, I don't.
Yeah,
he's not the only one.
Yeah,
there's some other folks I'd like to make sure
I
get it to.
I owe somebody a phone call from our conversation.
Yeah.
It came through David Cannon and John Warner today that they wanted that.
Yeah. Those are the folks I want to make sure
we'll get it to the people that
gets it. Yeah.
We'll make sure they have.
Yeah.
The one area where a majority of residents pretty clearly feel the urban center will have a negative impact on the city is traffic flow. So that is something that I think is going to take a little bit more than messaging to overcome. So something to keep in mind there.
You're not providing more funding.
And then the last few slides here are just our sample composition demographics of our respondents. We had a good mix of age ranges from our respondents. Again, had to sort of pump up those numbers among our 18 to 34-year-old residents at the end there. Luckily, text messaging seems to be a pretty effective way to get a hold of those folks relative to the email approach. We only have 7% of our respondents who have lived in the city for less than 2 years this time around. So we are we're 2 years into this panel sample, so that's not particularly surprising either. Next year will be our next panel refresh, so that number will go up. And overall, a vast majority of our sample are homeowners because we're relying primarily on that utilities database. We do supplement that with registered voter contact information, trying to target some of those renters through the avenues that we have. But we tend to see a much lower response rate among those folks. So doing our best. I hope that on our next panel refresh, we're able to capture even more of those folks and balance that out a bit. Pretty varied income distribution here among our respondents. And I believe that is the end of our presentation.
Yeah.
So ending on a bit of an anticlimactic note with those demographics, but that's the whirlwind tour of the data today. Any questions? I know Tatiana's taken some notes of the things that came up during the conversation, so happy to follow up on some of those length of residence breakdowns and crosstabs that might be helpful.
I'd like to, in the past, I've received a copy for just District 3.
Okay, we can do that.
Is that a hard thing or expensive? Or?
For the presentation itself, that would be tricky, but we could certainly pull together a top line with the numbers for District 3 specifically.
I'd like that. I'll bet Tamara would like it for District 4.
That'd be great.
Okay. Thank you. Happy to do that. Yeah, we can send along district specific top lines.
And of the, you probably addressed this, but of the, what did you say, 700-800 respondents, mm-hmm. were they proportional in each district?
Yes.
They were.
Yep.
Okay. So they were balanced throughout the city.
Yeah. Yep. We were looking at 150 to 200 respondents within each council district.
So as District 4's population starts exploding, are we going to balance that out differently, or are we still only going to give them a fifth of the city?
So our address-based sampling frame means that everyone in the city has an equal probability of being sampled for the survey, so regardless of which council district they're in. Okay. If the population in one district is substantially larger than the population in another district, we are naturally going to see more responses come from that district. But we're going to do our best to make sure that we stay in that minimum of 150 responses per council district to make sure that we have some statistical power for these comparisons.
Okay. Thank you.
The District 4 numbers could have been improved by one each, but I received this year. I had the chance to fill this out this year, but I didn't, because I don't want to skew the data, because I know what we're doing.
We're awesome.
Yes, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10. Yeah. And so I'm one of the people who did not respond to it because, and I really wanted to, but I was like, no, you know what? I have a bias there. I'm going to keep my bias and the immense amount of information I have about what we're doing out of this completely. So I didn't fill it out. I would have said you did.
You're my district.
Yeah.
You should have
been
there. What are your kids
doing? Anyway, yeah.
No, it's okay. I mean, I think
you had a lot of fans that filled it out. All of you did. Because there's a lot of good verbatim responses about everybody.
Yeah. Anybody have any other questions?
Good job.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your
Thanks
time.
Thanks so much, as always. Appreciate it. Tell your team hi from us.
Yes. Tatiana.
Tatiana snuck in late here. This is my director of research, Tatiana. You'll be seeing more of her over the coming years.
Awesome. Every time I get an email from Quinn Moss, and I'm like, oh, I wish I could respond to that, but I just so can't, because that wouldn't be fair, so not.
Unless it's not for South Jordan.
Well, see, but that's what's weird, because I used to get emails from Quinn Moss, and like when he was my professor, things like that. So now they come through, and I'm like, oh, yeah. He's not going to do it, but yeah. It's good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to go to item
I didn't know 8 years.
So fun. We are challenged for time. We're going to turn to Stephen to talk about our moderate income housing.
Thank you, Mayor.
So just go ahead and jump right in.
Yeah, and we can keep this moving. The not going to be as exciting or rah-rah, but the reason we do this is, as you know, housing affordability is a hot topic. Housing gap, housing needs, housing market, I mean, these are all things that we hear a ton. And the survey illustrates the problem that we have, right? On the one hand, we need affordable housing. People recognize that. On the other hand, growth and density are all dirty words. Right. And so the city, however, is mandated by the state to adopt policies related specifically to moderate income housing. And so that's what we're going to talk about tonight. It's really difficult to talk about it without diving too deep into the weeds. So I'm going to try to keep it high level, and I'll try not to complain too much. There's at least one slide that I just couldn't not show you because it really gets me, but
let's start with that one.
Yeah, no. you'll know it when you see it. So here's the discussion goals. First, we'll just talk about the state of the housing discussion generally. You know what it is. I have a report from the legislature that I think sort of encapsulates what we've been hearing both from the legislature and developers and others. It's not surprising, the results of that housing audit. So we'll talk a little bit about that. I thought about bringing a copy for you, but if you really want to dive into it, you can find it online. And then we'll review our 2019 housing plan. That was the last time that we adopted a housing plan in a totally different world than today, if you think about that. And then we'll review the 2023 implementation plan. So the housing plan requirement has existed for years and years and years. This implementation plan, the quote-unquote menu items of housing, affordable housing strategies, is what's new. But the housing requirement for the general plan has existed for years. But in 2023, we were required to get a little more specific about what we're going to do and when. And so we'll review that. And then obviously, interrupt me at any time with questions, concerns, or direction as we dive into this. So I wanted to bring this up again. I don't want to get into all of it. I've got the findings and recommendations here, and there's a lot in here to be frustrated with. At the very end of this audit was a really great response from the Utah League of Cities and Towns, sort of combating some of the misconceptions in this report.
So, question.
Yeah.
Statewide audit, was that right?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Not city. There's nothing to do with our city. It's just a statewide.
No. In fact, they called out two cities, Springdale and Lehigh.
Okay.
They did not come talk to us about for this report. Okay. I have talked to the auditors about UTA, for example.
Yeah.
An audit they're doing with that, but I have not talked. I did not talk to them about this. Yeah.
They contacted me. And they were on a brief tour with on taking a day break and some of the things there to get some of the ideas. And so South Jordan was looked at it, but it's a lot of the things that they like about different things coming from our city, we just weren't mentioned.
Okay, good to know.
So Springdale and Lehigh were called out negatively?
Negatively.
Yes.
So South Jordan was not called out negatively. The reason I bring this up is just, it really is, I think, a good summary of the discussion being had at a state level. The concerns that are being brought up at a state level, the misconceptions, a lot of that. And there was a lot in here that I could have pulled out, but I think these comments from chapter 3 of the audit are helpful to give you the tone of this report. So it says, it is difficult to make comprehensive statements about Utah cities. Interestingly, though, they then make comprehensive statements about Utah cities. Because of the different
but
approaches.
It was difficult. It was difficult.
Yeah, it was difficult, but we did it. We did it.
Yeah, maybe sense about their feelings.
Yeah. And then they continue, because of the different approaches they take toward land use management. To me, that's a strength of cities, not a problem with cities. But it's sort of couched as a problem. That because each city approaches things differently, that's why we're in the situation we're in with housing. Nevertheless, we believe that the limited city ordinances and processes we reviewed, again, emphasis on the word limited, as part of this audit can be informative for policymakers. So the idea of this report is to inform policymakers, the legislature.
But we're not doing it right.
Yeah, but there are things in here to also inform city councils, such as yourselves. It goes on, some cities exercise their land use authority to circumvent the intent of new pro-housing laws. That was where Springdale and Lehigh were called out, while remaining technically within the bounds of the law. Again, I sort of struggle with that. I've found, and I'll mention this in terms of our implementation plan, that it's tricky to get the intent of a law, but also stay within the bounds of that law and then be criticized for not going far enough. Such examples suggest, and this is the key, policymakers will have to fine-tune housing policies multiple times over several years. This year, and I don't know what Ryan's opinion or the mayor's opinion is about this year, I think we dodged some bullets. I didn't see any broad sweeping changes to these specific housing plan requirements, which I was very grateful for. So anyway, we'll see what the next years bring us. In addition, our limited review of specific complaints against cities found no widespread problems with statutory noncompliance. Remember, they start off by saying people circumvent. However, it's not widespread, but we're gonna focus on those that do circumvent. Okay, so here's the slide. This just gets me because this is the discussion about density that is so troubling to me because, frankly, this is naive and it doesn't, I mean, we've got a realtor, a former appraiser in the room. This is absolutely not how it works. If you have, yes, do you have some background here?
So I sat in a room with Chris Graham Rulis during the session. And it was funny because Mike Osmeller, the realtor people, all of them were proposing all these nice ideas and what they want to do, and we did avoid this, is a set density. That if we just say, if you put in 8 units an acre, 6 of them will be affordable at, let's say, $350,000 a house, and you build smaller houses on it, that's just how the land will work out. And Chris gave 3 or 4 examples of this. But he says, listen, I can make more off of those 4 homes than I ever would. It's not straight line math like this. It just doesn't work that way. And going denser does not give a developer and Ivory Homes, these guys that do it, and our real estate agent and our appraisers can look at that too. You just can't draw a straight line, but that's the easy way for legislators and policy people to think about is if that one piece is 300,000, you divide it in 4, and you do this straight line. It absolutely doesn't work that way. Every developer, if you put a little truth serum in it, will tell you that. Going to flat out densities, everybody makes no more money, and it's just so difficult to get that through. The reason we don't have this today is one person is the speaker who said cities have done enough over the past 3 years. I'm not going to let him do it this year. Next year, you'll probably see this.
I'm confident that will be the case.
Sorry, I won't.
No, that's great.
But
Brian made my point.
It was fascinating to hear Chris Graham Gola say, you guys are just wrong.
Yeah, so by dispersing the land costs, the overall cost of each home is lowered. So that assumes that there's sort of an intrinsic value to land that is separated from the zoning attached to it. That if you can build one house on a lot or if you can build eight, that the person that owns the property will sell it to you for the exact same price. So that's the first fallacy. The second one that I saw is this assumption that through this process, any of those savings that they may get in the land purchase will be passed on to the homeowner. So, okay.
And they just gulp the Kool-Aid, don't they?
Yeah.
I also love that they'll build a small, reasonable house with linoleum and.
Yeah.
But who's going to buy it?
Or mica countertops. Who will buy a house like that? Yeah. There's tons of people.
There's tons of people
house.
That would.
I know because I've lived by a lot of them. They'll buy them on a heartbeat. But they won't buy them for $500,000-$600,000. And that's where you're.
That's the problem. You don't pass on any of those cost savings. So if you actually could pass on this house savings and get the house down to $300,000, it'd be gone in a heartbeat.
So we have control over policies. And that's where I try to focus. I try to focus on the mandate that we have and the policies that we can adopt. Because there's a lot of arguments and justifications that are hard to swallow. So at the end of the day, I just have to focus on what is the mandate and what can we control as a city? And we can fight about the rest at other times. So I'm nostalgic for the good old days of 2019 when life was good. This was pre-pandemic, market craziness, right? With everybody, we thought 2020 would bring a downturn in the market and it didn't, it just got harder. So keep that in mind when we read this next thing. I'm going to go back. This next quote, it's not false still. It's just, if it were included in a plan today, we would be accused of being tone deaf in including a phrase like this in a current housing report. So this is from page one. Although housing affordability is a concern in Utah, that today is a huge understatement, right? Home prices along the Wasatch Front are still substantially more affordable than in other economic centers in the West. So following this statement was a table.
That was in 2019.
In 2019 that showed affordability. And just as a side note, affordability in its simplest terms is, with the income you have, can you spend 30% of that, which includes mortgage, rent, plus utilities, on a home? Can you find a home for your income level? That's the simple definition of affordability. And so that's what we're talking about in terms of affordability. Yes, if you compare us to other Western metros, like take San Francisco, for example, right? We are more affordable. What's concerning is since 2019, they've always been unaffordable, and suddenly we're rising up there to be there with them. And so that really is the concern. So Matt Jarman did a great job helping me on this. We, just as a side note, we are not entirely sure how Zions Bank came about their numbers. So the methodology is a little bit different. So the only reason I present these to you is not as the end-all be-all, but kind of a comparison. Also of note, and this is a challenge whenever we're asked for information about housing, our data always lags about a year. So this is actually the end of 2022 numbers. It says 2023, but that's when the county takes their assessments for 2023. So we're behind a little bit, but this is the best data that we have. And so we tried to use the same data source that Zions used, but there are a few discrepancies. But as you can see, between 2019 and roughly 2023, we had a huge increase proportionately in apartments in South Jordan. Also, we had a huge increase in single family residential. Again, the Zions grouped townhomes and single family detached in 2019. So I've broken it out there for you. But it shows from 2019 to 2023 how overall lot sizes have gone down. And how prices have increased. This should not be a surprise, right? That this has been happening, but across all housing types. And of course, that townhome section is now sort of the bottom of the market. That's the bottom of the market for us. That's where all the pressure is on those quote unquote more affordable units, as well as some condos. So these numbers obviously are already a bit different than what we had at the beginning of 2023. So unless there's any questions, we'll move right along to the actual mandate. The actual mandate is that municipalities facilitate a reasonable opportunity for a variety of housing, including moderate income housing. So that's a requirement that has existed through the housing plan. And then how we will provide those in the next 5 years. So this was adopted, our current plan was adopted in November 2019. So we'll need to update it by then. I've already contacted Zions to understand what it would take to update that plan so that we kind of have a comparison between 2019 and today, with the goal that we kind of keep going down the road that we're going down. So as I review these quote unquote menu items, these are things that are already in our plan. We're required to choose at least 5 strategies from this list. These probably will seem familiar to most of you, but we're required to choose 5 items. If we choose 6, then we get priority funding for transportation dollars. There's also some of these strategies that because we are the city we are, we're required to choose that strategy. Because we have transit, we're required to choose, for example, the station area plan. So there is some flexibility if we want to change some of these strategies. My feeling at this point is let's take it on for the next 5 years and see what else we can do with these strategies. But if you get a chance to review the housing plan, the old one, and you have differing opinions, obviously let me know and we can entertain other things. Otherwise, my intent is to get going on an update based on what we already have, refresh it with new information so that we know what our true housing gap is. And then if there's any strategies that really stand out as something that we should do that we haven't done in the past, then I'll bring that to you. But otherwise, my intent is to keep going down the same road. So as I said, there was a change in the law that required an implementation plan. So in 2019, we had already chosen our menu items, but then in 2023, we were required to adopt an implementation plan because, frankly, the legislature didn't think cities were taking it seriously. So our implementation plan, and I've learned a lot since 2023 about maybe some wording or some other ideas of how to really communicate what we want to do in this community. So with the update, we will have a new implementation plan. This is what we have to report on every year. Every August 1st, we have to report our progress on this implementation plan. So I'm just going to run through, unless there's any questions, I'm going to run through what our current implementation plan has and give you a preview of what we need to bring to you in the next few months so that we can report satisfactorily August 1st. And then after August 1st, we'll be bringing through public hearings to the Planning Commission and then City Council a new housing plan for you to consider. So the first menu item is related to accessory dwelling units. We'll defer this because this is a big topic. It's scheduled for March 19th, so I'll move right along. The next one is to amend land use regulations to allow for high density or new moderate income residential development in commercial or mixed use zones near major transit investment corridors. So we've got 2 of those corridors. One is the Front Runner and one is Trax and Daybreak. So in our implementation plan, we mentioned HTRZ. Since we adopted this, the HTRZ has been approved. Development is ongoing. So there's lots to report there. I feel good about that. Changes to the development plan development floating zone. We mentioned in our implementation plan that we might make some tweaks to that, provide a bit more guidance. We did adopt some changes in 2024 specifying the 8 units per acre. So I'll be reviewing that, but I think I feel pretty good about being able to report that we've made progress on that one as well. The next one is to eliminate or reduce parking for residential developments where residents are less likely to rely on their own vehicle, such as near major transit investment corridors or senior living facilities. We currently allow a reduction in parking. I think the intent of this is to have it more more clear in our code when you get a reduction and when you don't. Ours is more of a process. So we'll probably be looking at that. One of the challenges that we have is Daybreak kind of has its own, Daybreak's already there in terms of what people think parking should be about around residential, which is why you get all the complaints about no parking. So if we make a change in the parking reduction ordinance, it will likely have a greater effect on the rest of the city and new developments in particular. So obviously this wouldn't change any situation that currently exists, but we'll be likely bringing you something. We'll try to keep it manageable so that we can have reasonable parking discussions with residential developments. So the next one is to implement zoning incentives for moderate income units and new developments. I list the Shoreline development as the big one that we have approved that has the incentive of density, right? To build hopefully some more moderate income units. But we've had others that we listed in our report. So we'll continue reporting those efforts. They are, again, I'll report everything after August 1st, 2023. Through this year. So there's things still to report, even if at this point we didn't approve another development. But there are more developments coming for your consideration that could qualify under this one. So if there's not any questions there. This is the use of RDA funds for affordable housing, the senior housing project. We'll leave it at that for now, hoping for some movement on that before August 1st so that we have some good information to report in our report. That will be huge for our report if we can get some movement there. The other thing is we're always bringing up, not always, for certain developments, the question of whether we can use RDA money like we did at Bingham Court comes up, and we will continue to report those efforts as well. So again, this is another one that I feel pretty good about. And then the last one, yes, this is the last one. We are required to adopt station area plans. We already did that for one of our stations. We were the first community to submit the resolution. I looked up a list of approved station area plans. There's still not very many on WFRC's website. So either the website isn't approved or we're still one of like, I think, four or five that are approved. So the next step is to do the same thing for the Daybreak stations, which is basically there's an option under the station area planning that says either you have to do the plan or by resolution from the city council show that you've taken prior actions that comply with the goals or that's impracticable to make large changes. So we'll show both of those in that resolution. And I'm pretty confident after talking to WFRC the last time that those will qualify under that as well. Once you adopt that, then we'll send it to WFRC for approval. So expect that again before August 1st, before our reporting period, for you to consider adopting another resolution, but this time for the Daybreak stations. And then the last one is the Jordan Gateway Front Runner Station Area Plan. In talking to WFRC, I don't think we qualify under prior action or impracticability. Even though if you drive up to that area, it's generally built out. We know what properties left. There's not a lot of it. We know what those property owners want to use it for, regardless of zoning. So it doesn't make sense, in my mind, to completely, you know, to come up with this beautiful, expensive plan. And so in talking to WFRC, they still think we can qualify if we focus on increasing connections and transportation and some of the other issues that you're supposed to address besides housing in the station area plan. So we'll be engaging on them this year. Just taking a step back, the Daybreak stations have to be taken care of before we can adopt, or before the new station in Daybreak can open. So that's critical that we get that taken care of soon, and we will be doing that.
And that's slated for 2025, the new station.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What part of 2025?
I haven't heard the latest.
Depends on who you ask.
April 15th.
I haven't heard anything.
Yeah.
What?
I have April 15th is the target date. For
well, because that's when they play ball. Is that why?
Yeah, before the ballpark opens.
But you hear from UTA, this is as fast as they've ever gone or will ever go.
Yeah,
so.
UTA is not happy. Friday, I got the agreement from them and UDOT on TTIP. We're working that out now. Expect to have it back then tomorrow.
Yeah.
So I've met with them and explained, because they were concerned that we didn't have a station area plan in place yet. So I explained what Daybreak is and that the agreement has existed. To the, what is his name? He used to be the economic development director for Sandy. He's now there.
Nick Dirksen, yeah.
Yeah. So I met with them several months ago and explained what we intend to do here to meet that requirement.
Nick knows what Daybreak is.
Is that...
Does Nick live here?
So what
does
he
does. He lives in South Jordan, doesn't he? Yeah.
You too.
Yeah.
Probably in District 4. I'm just kidding.
UTA,
yeah.
Though?
No. So just as when you mentioned there's only four or five that have been approved, that is true. Because we had our easiest one that we were able to do first, which was helpful. That was a good thing. But there are 15 or 17 in the queue that we expect to come up fairly quickly, so they go before, once staff recommends them to the Regional Growth Committee. Regional Growth Committee passes them on to us at the WFRC, and then we either yes or no them. So far, they've all been yes, because there's a great deal of work that goes into getting them there. The staff's not going to move them to Regional Growth. They're not going to recommend them to us as a council unless they're ready. But there's a bunch in the hopper.
Well, that's actually really good to know, so I'll prioritize getting this in that bunch.
Idea. Yeah, there's a
I will say, with Resolution 2023-10, the old Bingham Highway Station, we spent a lot of time going back and forth with Megan and her team, and so that was helpful to make sure that they felt comfortable presenting that. So yeah, it's not a checkbox for them, for sure.
It definitely isn't. We're the only ones that have had this kind of, we meet it because there's nothing different than can be done. We're the only ones that have had one of those passed so far. Farmington's had a major new plan. Salt Lake City's have had major new plans. And so we're the only one that, which, you know, I actually, when I spoke, used to illustrate, but this is the beauty of this, is that it's individual per community. This stop right here can't be changed because it's already built out with single family homes, the whole entire radius, you know, that's, we can't change that. But so we tried to illustrate that way that's okay. You know, that is okay. But yeah, just know there's a bunch that are coming up.
So after January, the first part of January, I started to feel really anxious that we had way too much to do before August to meet the requirements. After reviewing the plan, I believe that we're in a good place, that this is all manageable. And so you'll be seeing things next council meeting. We'll bring up some changes to the ADU ordinance for you to consider and get your feedback before we take it to Planning Commission. And then you'll be seeing station area planning and maybe a tweak to parking in the senior housing project as well. So that is where we're at. Are there any questions about the path forward with the future plan or current efforts? Yes.
Just a question. So, I mean, a lot of developers come in, they want to build what looks like a townhome, but they want to keep it, retain it as a part of their own portfolio and rent it out. And I understand there's a lot of money for them to make in that. Does, you know, and does this count towards that, you know? I mean, so when they're open, they're rentals?
Yeah, I mean, the challenge is we don't control what they charge for rent. So
yeah.
that's the hard thing with density, right, is... We can approve a dense project, but if there's lots of amenities, if they charge a lot, it won't be affordable.
Yeah.
So unless, it's hard.
Yeah.
Unless they're willing to restrict rents, like, so for example, a senior housing project where money is used to keep rents low, long-term, those rents are counted towards our affordable housing stock and help us bridge that gap that exists for the city. But yeah, that's the hard thing always. And the reason we can only control the policy in the end, though, we've seen our apartments, we'll just use apartments, across the city not be affordable based on a lot of metrics. And so it's challenging for sure.
Yeah.
Stephen, how many did you just present to us? I lost track. How many options were there? Five?
So this is six. This is a total of six.
Okay, mm-hmm. Good.
Yep.
That's good. I lost track and I was
Yeah, no worries.
Six. Thank
yeah.
you.
So these are, so our housing plan included other strategies, but these are the six from that menu. And you see like the V, so this is, they have menu items A through, I can't remember if it goes all the way to Z, but essentially over 20 options that cities can choose from. This happens to be one of the required ones for
That's
this
city. That's
something
that cities negotiated. That was the league. That's 100%. We had to negotiate that to create menu options because otherwise MIHP was very prescriptive. It just has to be this, the end. You know, so the menu items took a lot of work.
So if there's one of these menu items that you're not happy with, there's other options that we can discuss in the next plan. But this is what we have to deal with right now. So
I have a question.
Yeah.
I'm fine with what you've presented, but on that parking reduction.
Yeah, I'm not worried about that one.
Yeah. Does that have account at all for whether or not the rest of your city is serviced by transit? Because we can build around our transit stations, but they still need to go grocery shopping and can't hop on a bus or whatever. It doesn't do them any good to be down a car.
Right.
Not parking, so.
This is what the requirement is. So there's no other, and so in the end, it's a conversation that we need to have, and then whether we believe it's actually making a difference or will pass muster. Again, you go back to that audit and it talks about cities technically applying or, you know, complying with the law versus subverting the law. And, you know, it's a tricky balance. So there was actually a study. I think WFRC was involved. We have a copy of it. I intend to review it with our engineers. Specifically, Jeremy and I have talked about looking through it and seeing if there's any tweaks that we can make specifically to housing that are palatable with parking. But yeah, it does say near major transit investment corridors and senior living facilities. I think we get credit for Daybreak, but if we're trying to change or show that we're actually trying to figure out something new, that's where it gets a little trickier.
Was it 2020 that this passed? When did, or 2021? When did this go through? 21? That's what I was looking for, is my white paper and all my stuff about MIHP. But I have 2 billion emails that go to it, so I can't.
I had to print everything off and review it because it was all in different places.
Yeah, that's
and
what I've been looking for. I've got too much of it to narrow it down.
Well, I think that's why so many cities have been confused and have had issues in truly implementing this is because it's been so piecemealed that it's been hard to keep track of.
And one of the hard things,
significant edits in 2022.
Right. So that's what I was thinking, you know, because I was thinking it came out in 2022, but that's when the big changes happened.
That's when I made more changes.
And, you know, we were fairly detailed in our implementation plan, and it kind of bit us this last
is that
time.
What, is that what it was? Is that we were too detailed?
Yeah, it's sort of like you're The law seems to be pretty flexible, but the way that it's applied seems to be pretty rigid.
Yeah.
And so this next round, we're going to try to figure out how do we really describe what we're trying to do as a city without boxing us in? Because as you know, over the course of a year, things change. Mm-hmm. We could start off saying we have really good intentions to do something, but something else makes sense, or we shift. And so without having to go through the whole exercise of having to change the plan, which is lengthy and can cost money, how do we bake into some of that flexibility that we think already exists in the law?
And just so you're all alert, we only have 7 council meetings between now and when this report's due. So you're going to see a lot of things on the next few agendas because there's only 7 meetings between now and the 1st of August.
Wow. Kind of related, but kind of unrelated. Did anything go through? I just don't know. I just don't remember. Did anything go through to get some more help for Alyssa?
They had it in one of the early appropriation bills.
Right.
So Alyssa is the WFRC individual.
No, she's actually the one in Christina's shop. She's
WFRC,
workforce. And so these all go to her.
Yeah. But She's like the only one reviewing all of these.
Yeah.
And when Steve said that law seems flexible, the statute, the admin rules, give us a lot of ways to address this. She's one person, she's going through, if it makes sense to her, you're good. If it doesn't, you know, and they acknowledge that as an issue they're trying to work on. She makes herself hugely available.
She
worked
does.
With us
and
when
she's great.
So it's not
I just
her.
Asked that. No, not at all. I only asked that because I knew there was initial proposal for some funding to get some more help for workforce services in Christina's shop to try to be able to.
I'll check and see.
I don't
if
know
if
what
they
that
got
is.
That through.
Okay,
but
thank you.
I know early on it was a high priority.
Yeah. Well, I hope
they messed with some of those at the last minute, so that's why I know.
Yeah, this, right.
We're still sorting out the aftermath of last week.
Yeah, I'd love to know where that's at, just because, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm happy to go through any of this with you individually. If you have questions, it's all available on our website, and we'll just make sure that we're systematically going through this and bringing items to you for your approval.
So I'll be on the planning website?
Yep, it's all on the planning under the general plan. So this is all under the umbrella of the general plan. So if you go to our planning webpage, the general plan is at the bottom and we've got all the documents. So
just to really quickly add a little bit of context about, not only is this required by law, it's by statute that this has to be done and has to be met, whatever, but we would not have been able to receive approval for our new track station without this having been approved. And it's just such a comprehensive amount of work to get this done and then get it approved by Workforce Services and get it approved by UDOT. And they have word that, okay, it's good. Then we can even consider talking to you and working with everybody. It's just been a lot. And so thank you. Thank you to you and your team for all the work that's gone into this and to Ryan and everything that it's taken to get us to this point. But we can't even hope to accomplish what we're hoping to do unless this is approved and all the steps happen all throughout the year to make it happen. It's a lot, but there's also a lot riding on it. So thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, anybody have any other questions?
I have one. I'm curious. We're going to talk about ADUs March whatever.
March 19th.
Is there a chance we could get that earlier than the Friday before?
What do you want?
Just kind of what we're going to be talking about, what the proposal will be.
I was going to have an appointment.
The proposal is pretty straightforward, so I can send that. Absolutely. We had talked about walking through some of the state law requirements and our existing ordinance, and we can decide whether that makes sense or not. But I'll send that out as well.
Thank you. Thank you. Anybody have anything else? If not, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate it, you and your team and all the work.
Yeah, no problem.
Thank you. We have come to the conclusion of this. And as a reminder, we are not having a regular council meeting tonight because it is caucus night. We encourage everyone to participate in whatever caucus you choose to be part of. But it is caucus night tonight. And so that being said, across the state of Utah. So for that, I'm going to ask for a motion to adjourn so we can send everybody on their way to wherever you're headed.
Yeah, I'll move to adjourn.
Thank you. Right, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All right, we stand adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.